WHR, Wisconsin Rapids, 1320 AM and W248DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Staples.
I'm Wendy Gillette in New York. More charges against former President Donald Trump and another defendant in the classified documents case. The property manager at Mar-a-Lago, Carlos de Oliveira, is scheduled to make his first court appearance Monday. CBS News correspondent Scott McFarland.
In this superseding indictment, the special counsel Jack Smith accuses de Oliveira, Walt Nada, another Trump aide, and Trump himself of trying to destroy evidence of an effort to delete surveillance footage from Mar-a-Lago, potentially footage that showed the movement of boxes and potentially the movement of classified records.
Police have charged the Alabama woman who claimed she saw a toddler on the highway and was then kidnapped. Days later, Carly Russell admitted she lied. Hoover Police Chief Nick Durzis.
This afternoon, Carly Russell, with the assistance of her attorney, turned herself into the Hoover City Jail, where she was arrested for the following charges: false reporting to law enforcement authorities, Class A misdemeanor, $1,000 bond. Falsely report an incident, a Class A misdemeanor with a $1,000 bond. Each of these charges carry up to a year in jail and potential fine of $6,000 upon conviction.
The library is a haven from the high heat in Minneapolis. WCCO-TV reporter Jason Rentala.
It's definitely a good place to come and get cool.
In this extreme heat, cooling centers like the Minneapolis Central Library.
We are seeing quite a bit of an uptick for folks coming in.
Play a critical role in keeping people cool.
The great thing about the library is it's a place you can come and just hang out.
The downtown Minneapolis Library is just one of 41 in Hennepin County alone.
Getting a new passport is a problem these days. CBS's Christina Ruffini.
Across the nation, panicked passportless passengers are reaching out to lawmakers.
This is a basic governmental job.
Oklahoma Republican Senator James Lankford says his office has had to assign 3 full-time staff members to passport duty.
Is this the number one issue you're hearing from constituents right now?
Yeah, I have about 250 open cases right now.
There's another huge lottery jackpot.
A busy day for ticket sales for the $910 million Mega Millions jackpot.
Hope. You know, you have to be hopeful and wish that maybe you'll hit it. Dream. Dream big.
28 straight drawings without a big winner. The last one was April 18th. It's the 8th largest lottery prize in U.S. history.
Because you can't win if you don't play.
Steve Kathan, CBS News.
A rally for the stock markets. The Dow is up right now 170 points. The S&P is up 43. This is CBS News.
Staples stores provide innovative products and services for small business, remote workers and learners, even teachers and parents. Explore more at your local Staples store.
If you're hiring, it can feel like you're trying to find a needle in a haystack. You can hope the right person comes along, or you can just use ZipRecruiter. And now you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/free. In fact, ZipRecruiter has helped a lot of business owners find their needle in a haystack. Like Marco, president of operations at Telly Tires and Auto Centers. Because Telly Tires has grown a lot in the last few years, Marco needed to hire everyone from a receptionist to a store manager to a head mechanic.
ZipRecruiter helps me find all the right people, even the most difficult jobs to fill. ZipRecruiter helps me keep my business running.
Take it from Marco and millions of other businesses who've used ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter can help you find the needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. At ZipRecruiter.com/free. That's ZipRecruiter.com/free. ZipRecruiter.com/free. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
Hey, this is Petty Pincher Bob, and I love a good rummage sale. If you love them too, you can list your Saturday rummage sale right here on this radio station. Your 15-second Saturday rummage sale ad runs Friday all day and Saturday morning for only $50 per week. If you would like to list your Saturday rummage sale, call us now, 715-629-9501. The deadline for each week is Wednesday at noon. Operators are standing by now. Please have a valid credit card ready to go. See ya!
For WFHR and WIRI, I'm Melissa Kay. Here's what you need to know in central Wisconsin. In Wood County, the Judicial and Legislative Committee will meet at 11 a.m. on Monday, July 31st at the courthouse in Room 114. The third annual Touch a Truck event happens tomorrow in Grand Rapids. The road is open to the Grand Rapids Lions Club for the Family Center Touch a Truck event from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. They'll have raffle baskets, local law enforcement and fire department vehicles, Army vehicles, a Wood County rescue vehicle, and maybe even a helicopter. Free construction hats for the first 500 kids and guest appearances by Miss Wisconsin Rapids, Roscoe Rat, and Rowdy from the River Kings. There's free vision screenings and free books for the kids. They'll also have food and event merchandise for sale. National Night Out in Wisconsin Rapids is Tuesday, August 1st from 5 to 7 p.m. at the Crossview Church parking lot. Come out for a fun night and help build up your community with local law enforcement. I'm Melissa Kay for WFHR and WIRI, Civic Media News.
Hi, I'm Mandy Roberts, financial advisor with Thrivent. I'm here to help you assess your finances and find solutions to meet your needs. Let's ensure you have a strategy for success. To get started, call 715-470-1303. That's 715-470-1303.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio, WFHR. Chance for isolated storms tonight, otherwise overcast skies. Lows dip down to about 60, northeasterly winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Mainly clear skies tomorrow, high temperatures reach up to 82. Mainly clear skies and quiet again tomorrow night, lows level off around 55. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Right now, 87.
Welcome, everyone, to Midday Magazine for this July 28th, 2023. Have your host, James J. Mailoff, here. At 3:30, we're going to welcome in Craig Broren, superintendent with the Wisconsin Rapids Public Schools. We'll have Phil Bickelholt with us as well, director of technology. We'll be talking a little bit of that with them. Right now, our good friend Scott Seeger is here. Scott, CSW, Regional Dementia Care Specialist. We appreciate you being here. Scott, always good to see you. How you been?
Thanks for having me back. I'm doing good.
Good. Good to hear, Scott. Any opportunity that we have to touch on these subjects, we greatly appreciate. I want to thank you not only being here, being in studio, but certainly the dedication that you have put into this topic. I greatly appreciate it. And one of the things I've learned from you, Scott, working with you a couple of times here, is that this is a field that is always growing and changing. And sure. And you guys, you specifically, but everybody at the ADRC is always keeping up on this too. And just before we get to the outline here and some of the topics, I'm curious, how do you keep up on this stuff, Scott? Is there a one-stop shop to find out this information? Or is this one of those things where you're just going all over the place to get it?
Going all over the place.
Yeah.
Utilizing as many resources as we can.
Interesting. Scott, let's dive right in. Can you explain your role as a dementia care specialist and what that is specifically?
Yeah, so myself and a colleague of mine, we serve Four County Region, and we are in our position to help bring dementia awareness and education to our communities. And it looks a couple of different ways. We can work with different organizations to help them better understand maybe what their customers might be dealing with as the customers come into their agency or their organization. We also provide education out in the communities, and most importantly, we directly support individuals living with dementia and their caregivers.
Scott, can you discuss who a caregiver is? I do this all the time. I bring this up because I think it's so interesting, and it really is noteworthy. I think it's a good example of this. I think it's pretty simple to say what a caregiver is for us to look up the description of Webster's Dictionary or something like that. But us personally, we don't tend to think of this. I remember when my dad and my dad specifically, but my mom as well, were helping with my Nana when she was struggling with dementia and Alzheimer's. And I talking to my dad about, you know, hey, you're a caregiver, man. And my dad not think, no, I'm just taking care of my mom. Mm-hmm. But that's what a caregiver is. So flash forward a good 10 years or so, and my mom and dad are both having hip issues. And I'm there at their house almost all the time, helping them get around, doing things. I'm doing every little thing I can for them. And of course, they're Italian and stubborn, so they're doing as much as they want themselves. But I'm doing all of these things, and then I'm sitting back with another member from the ADRC, and we're talking about caregiving. And I had this like, oh, wait a minute. I'm my father. I'm slowly more and more becoming a poor man's version of my father, where even I made this mistake. Even though I talked, and I don't have the excuse that my dad does. Like, I talk to you guys once a month. I know better. But I've been doing caregiving for at least a year, and I didn't even know it.
Probably much longer than a year.
Yeah. So when we ask a question like that, who is a caregiver? It's a bigger answer than I think a lot of us realize.
It's very broad. And your example is what we deal with every day. Family members especially do not consider themselves caregivers. But if you are helping support anybody, doesn't have to be a family member. Mm-hmm. It could be a neighbor. It could be something as simple as grabbing the neighbor's mail and taking it to the house, making a phone call to check in on somebody. That is the start of being a caregiver. And then, as you're well aware, it gets to be very much more involved and oftentimes intimately involved when you're dealing with personal cares.
Yeah. Scott, just go off to the side a little bit here with me. Why is it important to understand that you are a caregiver?
Because caregiving is hard.
Yeah.
Caregiving is not easy, and when you're out there as a caregiver, doesn't matter how involved you are with that person you're supporting, if you don't have support, it's going to be a much harder journey.
Mm-hmm. I use the example a lot, and I really appreciate you guys using it too, as well as others using it. I think more and more people should. It's a perfect example. You're on an airplane. They tell you to put your mask on first before your kids. Every parental instinct in you is to put the mask on the kid first. But if you do that, you both pass out. You got to put yours on first, then you can put the kids on. You've got to be able to take care of your own backyard if you're going to be taking care of anybody else's.
Yeah, and that's a perfect example. And a lot of people don't relate to that very well because you're right. The first instinct is to help somebody else, and my needs can wait.
Yeah,
I'll just take care of myself later. That later doesn't always happen.
Yeah, yeah. And it's only you can fill your cup. You've got to be in charge of that. You've got to keep an eye on that cup. When inquiring about whether or not it is common for people to identify themselves as caregivers is very an interesting topic to me.
Yes.
And kind of where we're going with a lot of this. Once you identify yourself as a caregiver, you have this realization. What would you say are some of the first things you could do after that, as far as, you know, mental health or anything else?
Yeah, there's so much there that we could really, you know, peel back that onion and look at. The first thing, though, to your point about people not identifying, oftentimes when there's an obligation, especially to a family member, that obligation is to take care of them.
Mm-hmm.
That means you're a caregiver.
Yeah.
People forget the word care when they're really mm-hmm. taking care of a family member.
Yeah.
And so that's an obligation that people kind of mask over the word care and look beyond that. So when we are really stressing for caregivers to identify themselves as caregivers, mm-hmm. it is multifaceted. It does include their mental health. It does include their physical health. It oftentimes also includes their financial health.
Yeah.
And there's just so many pieces to this that caregivers tend to overlook on how it dramatically impacts their life.
So the importance of people being willing to identify as a caregiver is also important as well, because I could have somebody like who knows their stuff better than I ever will, like you, Scott, tell me you're a caregiver, and I'm like, no, I'm just helping out my folks, you know, that kind of thing.
Right.
But it's important for me to own that. It's important for me to understand that I'm a caregiver because of a lot of what you were just saying, correct?
Right. The difficulty and the complications that come along with caregiving get brushed aside. The more people are willing to acknowledge their role as a caregiver, the more willing they're going to be to accept that it's not easy, that it's difficult. And then they have the opportunity then to give themselves permission to listen to themselves, listen to their emotions, and really address those emotions.
A couple of weekends ago, my folks were out of town, and like I said, they're dealing with some, you know, issues. So I was trying to get some things done around the house for them, so when they came home, they were done. And I got a big chair that I was trying to get up the stairs. I can do this. I've got this. I'm strong enough. I know this chair has got nothing on me. I got this. Scott, between you and I, there was a moment I didn't know if I was going to make it. There was a touch and go moment there, man, where
right.
I'm like, wait a minute. I'm not as strong as I thought I was and all that.
Right.
It's a similar situation with caregiving.
Absolutely.
Where, oh, I can handle this. Oh, I can take all this. You don't want to find out you can't take it at the moment that you need it.
Right.
And that's the last thing you want. And that's the last thing a caregiver wants. It's the exact opposite of that. So by doing these things and taking it and owning this and being aware of it and everything, you avoid that situation, hopefully.
Yes, that's what we're trying to promote with people identifying as caregivers. And in your example specifically, if you would have injured yourself, mm-hmm. now who's going to be helping your parents
exactly.
tomorrow and the next day and the next day?
Yeah.
And that's where caregivers struggle to help themselves, is by identifying what happens if I can't as the caregiver, because there isn't always that backup person ready to go on a whim.
And another part of this, and is another reason why I bring up that example, is because it came from good intentions. And almost all of this starts there. Yep. It's not coming from a bad place or an egotistical, in fact, the opposite of that. And it got me actually looking into this a little bit, and I don't know how much you've seen of it, but just where is it, like in the nation, I just pretty much threw into search bars, the states that have the hardest time admitting their caregivers, you know, that kind of thing. And sure enough, the Midwest, we are really strong in this, because we're such a group of people that we don't take compliments. We don't brag. We don't do those kind of things. We're not usually that style of person. And that's not bad necessarily, but in situations like this, it becomes even harder to get somebody to realize they are a caregiver, identify as that, and how vital it is that they do that. They just kind of want to brush it off and good-intendedly brush it off.
Absolutely.
It's not about me. I'm just doing this to help them. They help me when I was a kid. I'm helping them now.
Right.
It's what we do. We get that, but you're still a caregiver, and you need to own that you're a caregiver.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
What changes occur in a person's life when they become a caregiver?
Yeah, this is where it gets really significant. There, for some caregivers, it's not a lot that changes, but there are others where the role changes, the relationship with that person they're caring for changes, the hierarchy in the family changes. Mm. You know, if they were used to having the partner take care of the household chores, and now they're doing all of that, that changes their role in the household. Maybe their partner managed the finances, the checking account, paying the bills. And if you've not done that, especially spouses who have been married for 50, 60 years, to now start that 60 years into that relationship, that's a big change.
Yeah.
And oftentimes it comes with a lot of anxiety and a lot of extra stress. They become nurses and doctors oftentimes because they need to deal with wound care and rehabilitation type things. You know, not nurses and doctors, you know, licensed, but they have to learn more about the medical needs.
Yeah.
They may become the chef or the chauffeur. They may become the gardener, right? I mean, it really can have some significant impacts on families. And then again, emotionally, if they're not supported, their own emotions get hidden. And when they're grieving the changes in their lives, maybe they've lost their job because now they're a caregiver. Maybe they've lost some significant finances because they're a caregiver. And then they don't have somebody to talk to about that stress, the sadness, maybe the anger, the resentment that they're living with. Those are all real emotions, and we don't want caregivers to hide and bury those. We want that to be on the table so they can talk about it and address those emotions.
For the caregiver, taking on more on your plate, we all only have so much bandwidth.
Yep.
And you probably already had a lot on your plate to begin with. You got a job, you got a personal life, any of these things, and then you add this on top of it. It's so important to be aware of that stuff, to acknowledge it, and to give yourself some grace with these things.
You bet.
With the person that we're talking about, one of the things that I've noticed, I didn't see this as much with my Nana as I do with my dad, a little bit of my mom, but really my dad. My dad is a Midwestern guy. Okay, enough said. I don't have to go much farther than that. We got pride, and we got male pride too, which makes it even harder to touch. It's like Teflon, man, to punch through that. I think that one of the things that is important too with this is trying to help that pride stay intact. Yep. You know, to get the dignity to him and such. You know, there are times where he'll drive, and then there are more times where I'll drive. But when I'm driving, I am very quick to say, well, you drove me to school all those times. Yeah. I'm just paying it back, man. Yeah. This, I'm not doing you a favor. I'm just paying it back. Like, the way I word things with him go a long way in helping that. He deserves to have his pride intact. Absolutely. He's done nothing to lose any of that. But we all also understand how guys can be, how anybody can be. Women are the same way, can be like this too. It's just, I'm picking on guys because we could be this way a little bit more often. Having that dignity is also so important to that person going through these things.
Yeah, and it's a societal thing, and you're absolutely right. You know, we have been brought up to see us asking for help as a weakness.
Yeah.
We need to change that narrative.
Agreed.
So that it actually shows how strong we are. Because when we think about, if your parents needed something, absolutely needed something that you couldn't provide, you would do everything in your power to get them what they needed. Why don't we do that for ourselves?
Yeah. Yeah.
We should do everything in our power, because if you're able to successfully get them what they need, it shows how strong you are and how you're able to kind of overcome these obstacles. We need to treat ourselves the same way.
It's funny. I learned that through my dad. He's the one that taught me that the strongest, one of the strongest things you can do in the world is asking for a hand, is help, is asking for help in those things. I'm trying to get him to relearn that a little bit, but you're so right about that. It's one of those things that I think we're it's a slow burn, but we're getting there in this society where I think we're getting better about that. And here's hoping at the very least. Why does the ADRC put an emphasis on supporting caregivers?
Well, the reason we want caregivers to be acknowledged and we put emphasis in that area is, without those caregivers, the success of people who are aging or living with a chronic health condition or living with a disability, the success is going to be very limited if those caregivers aren't their best selves. And that caregiver being them their best self includes not only their physical health, their mental health, their financial well-being. All of this comes together to create a situation that could really be a crisis if a caregiver does not have the kind of support that they need. We want caregivers to be able to give themselves permission to take care of themselves and find a balance with the care that they're providing to somebody else.
What happens when a caregiver does not get adequate support?
Yeah, that's the scary part. There are many times that we are supporting families and the primary caregiver is in the hospital. And now it's a crisis because they've unintentionally neglected their own health care needs. They've avoided going to the doctor because they don't have time to go to the doctor. So if it's not the physical health, then sometimes it's that emotional or mental health. And we see that breakdown. And unfortunately, the term is burnout. And we do have many situations, unfortunately, where caregivers have burned out and they don't have, as I'll take your words, the bandwidth to continue another day. And so then again, it becomes a crisis for that person, whether they're living with a chronic health condition or they're living with some type of a disability. Now it's a crisis for them and it's a crisis for the caregiver because we need to find support yesterday to make this work. And with the changes that we've encountered because of COVID, there are dramatic changes in the long-term care system that have impacted families in a negative way because there's not enough care and support out there. So the key is the support needs to be sought earlier, not necessarily to initiate a support service tomorrow, but to learn about what supports may be out there. So when caregivers don't get the help they need, they can fall ill and it can become a crisis because they weren't prepared for changes either with the person they're caring for or changes in their own life.
I'm curious, Scott, and I know we're so removed from it. We try not to bring up the word as often as we can, but when we talk about the pandemic, I wanted to bring this up almost instantly, but we had to wait some time here, and we're a couple of years removed and have a little more data to kind of look at these things. How has the pandemic affected caregiving? Have we seen an effect from it?
Yeah, I mean, on two levels. The biggest one is that there's many more family caregivers now because of the shortage of professional caregivers. Mm-hmm. Whether you're looking for an adult day center, whether you're looking for in-home services to come and take care of your person at home, or if you're having to look at transitioning to some type of assisted living or long-term care setting, there's a shortage of caregivers, which unfortunately directly impacts those people that need the help, and then indirectly affects the caregivers because they can't get the help that they need once they come to that realization that they need more help.
And can we talk now about some of the support, some of the options for caregivers, and try to help out that situation?
Yeah, so one of the things that's really cool about my role as a dementia care specialist, and again, there's two dementia care specialists at the ADRC. We also have two caregiver support coordinators. We have the opportunity to meet with families individually. Mm-hmm. We can learn about what their needs are, oftentimes helping them better identify what the needs are, because families, and we're all good at this, we adapt. We adapt to what's going on. And sometimes we overlook that, that's a need that we have. And so when we meet with them individually, we give them that platform to be able to further explore really the bigger picture. And so that's one thing, the individual meetings. With that individual meeting, we oftentimes will encourage family meetings. Because a lot of times the primary caregiver is shouldering this responsibility all by themselves. Again, it's a pride thing, not just for people who are living with some type of a chronic condition or a disability. The caregivers also have a pride thing that they're struggling with. I don't want to ask my brother, my neighbor, my sister, my whoever to help me as a caregiver, just like you said, because you can do that yourself.
Having another one of those moments, Scott, where as soon as you said brother and sister, I immediately realized, oh, wait a minute, I do that. Oh, dang it, I do that. Yeah. It can happen so much. There's an old Sicilian proverb, a true friend will tell you when there's dirt on your face. You want people to tell you when you got something stuck in your teeth, right? But you can't tell because you're too close to it. Right. That's this situation. You are so close to these things that you don't often see this stuff. It's great to have the EDRC, to have these people like Scott there that can help see that, that can help tell you these things. And it's their gig. It's their job. They're good at it. Very good at it. I wanted to, if you don't mind, Scott, take a couple of minutes to continue to talk not only about the options there, but also about some of the other ADRC programs. Are there other options with the caregivers that we can touch on?
Yeah, so other than the individual supports, we also co-facilitate some support groups, and there's other support groups in the area. And one of the most common things I hear from caregivers once they've started attending a support group is, I wish I would have done this years ago. Because they're connecting with other caregivers, and so then they don't feel so isolated and like they're by themselves on this caregiving journey. So we'll be promoting caregiver support groups. We have a managing caregiver stress class. So we do classes, and our next one is coming up August 15th, and we would welcome the opportunity to meet new caregivers and get them connected to some additional supports. We also do community-wide education events, and that's where the other entities within our organization as well are providing supports throughout the communities. A popular one is a Stepping On, which is a falls prevention and balance program. And it really is gaining a lot of momentum and support because, unfortunately, falls can result in the need for a lot more help.
It all ties together. I've been very happy to, I wish that you guys, honestly, I wish you guys weren't even needed. I wish everything was perfect and all that, obviously.
Agreed.
But as it is, I am happy to see that Stepping On class has been very successful and how many people I've heard from in the community that really benefit from taking those classes. And we love talking about them and certainly highlighting them in our shows, and we'll continue to. You can find find out more about the things that Scott is talking about by going to their website, adrc-cw.org. We'll mention that again before we wrap up. And I did mark down August 15th. I will be there. I should be there for that. I'm realizing more and more in this conversation. Any chance we talk with you guys at the ADRC? I always like to mention Meals on Wheels.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wanted to throw that out there. The ADRC is always looking for people to deliver these meals. And certainly families out there that need this, we encourage you to reach out to the ADRC as well. But looking at the volunteer aspect of this, it's one of the greatest uses of time that you can do. And it's a great quick way to put back into your community to help out and maybe make a new friend. You never know.
And they need you. You know, it's something that you're going to enjoy and feel good about. But oftentimes these people that are getting that meal, you may be the only person that they see every given week. And so it's a critically important thing to make sure our neighbors are okay.
Yeah. The ADRC that I worked with, or the group I worked with in California when I was doing this, they had, I don't know if you would call it training, but they talked me through a little bit of this first. And one of the first things they told me is the meals are important, but it's just as important to make some eye contact, to talk to these people. They didn't know me. I love talking to people, so I had no problem doing that. But you're a check-in as well. You're checking in on these guys and these people, these individuals. And everybody deserves that.
Absolutely.
So many of these individuals paved the way or did this job or did something like this in our society to help us get to where we are. This is just, paying it back and doing the right. And you would hopefully want somebody to do this for you. So
you betcha.
It goes a lot farther than I think we can explain. And the ADRC will work with you no matter what your schedule is. If you want to get this in your schedule, they'll fit it in. They'll figure it out. Scott, always appreciate the time. If people have follow-up questions, want to know more about some of what we talked about today, how can they reach you?
Yeah, best way to reach us is our phone number, toll-free 888-486-9545.
And again, that website, adrc-cw.org. And be sure to follow them on social media. It's a great follow. Please say hi to everybody, the whole staff for me, Scott, and you have a great weekend.
You as well. Thanks, James.
Thanks. We'll be back more Midday Magazine right here at WFHR.
Living happily ever after isn't always a reality. If you're over 50 and are considering divorce, attorney Andrea Gage with the Everson Law Firm can provide the guidance you need. Andrea focuses on silver divorces, the kind that get more complicated over time and present unique challenges. A family, multiple properties, significant assets. Andrea and the team at Everson Law have the experience to protect your interests. Call Everson Law to set up an appointment with Andrea today. It's never too late to be happy. Everson Law, 920-435-3734. Locally grown 1320 AM and 97.5 FM WFHR programming is broadcast from the Bug Tussle Studios.
Bug Tussle, keeping you connected to the world around you.
For WFHR and WIRI, I'm Melissa Kay. Here's what you need to know in Central Wisconsin. A man was arrested in the town of Merrill yesterday on drug charges and possession of a firearm as a felon, as well as operating as an unlicensed salvage dealer. The Lincoln County Sheriff's Office arrested Anthony Ellenbecker after a search of the property revealed a stolen vehicle, evidence of multiple years of salvage operations, and illegal drugs including meth and cocaine. Defense lawyers are pushing for the case to be moved to juvenile court for the teen who is accused of killing 10-year-old Lily Peters in Chippewa Falls. A motion hearing yesterday determined what evidence can be shown in court. The defendant, known only as CPB, now 15 years old, is charged with first-degree intentional homicide and first-degree sexual assault. Lily Peters was found dead last April. The hearing to determine if CPB will be tried as an adult or in juvenile court will begin August 7th. I'm Melissa Kay for Civic Media News on WFHR and WIRI.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio WFHR. Chance for isolated storms tonight, otherwise overcast skies. Lows dip down to about 60, northeasterly winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Mainly clear skies tomorrow, high temperatures reach up to 82. Mainly clear skies and quiet again tomorrow night, lows level off around 55. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Right now, 87.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Midday Magazine for this July 28th, 2023. Have your host, James, here. I am joined by some of our good friends. We have Craig Broren, superintendent with Wisconsin Rapids Public Schools. Good morning, Craig. Good afternoon, Craig.
Good afternoon.
Good to have you here. And we have Phil, I always do this with your last name.
Phil Bickelhaup.
Thank you. Phil is with us. He is the director of technology. Appreciate you both being here. First off, how's everybody doing? How are you enjoying your summer so far? Craig, how's it going?
Good. It's good. Been reasonably quiet. We've got that fairly sizable playground construction project going on over at Woodside, which is super exciting. They're telling us that that should be ready for, well, prior to, but ready for the start of school when kids arrive. So that'll be awesome, and it'll be a great amenity on that side of the city.
Yeah, they're doing some really good work over there, too, and that looks like it's on schedule.
Yeah.
I pass it all the time, and it looks like they're doing some great work over there. That is great to hear.
Yeah.
So we're going to talk a little bit about education and technology today, a little bit of AI. And I turn to you, Phil, with this, where it's such a broad topic, and there's so many different angles of it and everything. But I want to just discuss what do you think is the most important part of this changing kind of this adaption that we're doing, where we're doing more tech in our education and that? What is something that, you know, families out there, you think is important for them to know about this?
Well, you know, for those that don't know what AI is, it's artificial intelligence, and it's really starting to seep its way into everything that we do. It's kind of been doing that way for a long time,
yeah.
But now it's really readily accessible at fingertips with ChatGPT, mm-hmm. OpenAI, and it's amazing technology where you can just type in a question and it'll give you an answer. It's kind of like, you know, Craig and I have talked about, you know, the Google, when that first came out, it was going to be this game changer, and with Google, it just gives you a list of websites, whereas ChatGPT will actually give you, if you ask it to give you step-by-step detailed instructions on how to do something, it'll spit that right back out at you. And a lot of our, I wouldn't say our elementary teachers are too concerned about it. It's more of our upper-level high school staff. The high school kids might put in questions, mm-hmm. might get a creative writing paper written by ChatGPT for them or something along those lines. So we're really trying to figure out how to navigate that landscape. How do you do that?
With
this technology, because it's not going to go away. Not going to go away.
Journalistically, I should mention I'm a part of the Writers and Actors Guild and a part of that strike. I have a bit of a dog in this when it comes to this battle going on. I like a lot of people, I have this concern on AI, but I don't have this fear of it. But I'm also not in the public schools. My children are in their 20s. So this world of fearing about cheating or any of these other kind of things, I've had to do my homework on this, talk to some parents, talk about that. And what I'm seeing a lot of, just hearing from the individuals that I am, that a lot of the onus on this is not saying it's been put on, parents have been taking on themselves a little bit more than teachers, where, hey, is Johnny cheating? Is Johnny doing this? I'm going to talk to Johnny. I'm looking at his search history and these things. But how do teachers adapt to something like this? I'm very curious about that part of it.
Well, so that's the interesting aspect of it, and Phil did a great introduction. ChatGPT is probably what we've been focused on to a fairly significant degree because it's basically text-based. And what I think is valuable for your listeners to understand, too, is that these tools, similar tools for images and video and, you know, writing and all of the other things, are being integrated into things like Google and Microsoft, software. And so, as Phil mentioned, it's going to be ubiquitous. We're kind of, you know, there. And then ultimately what ends up happening is that, you know, you have conversations in education, much like Google, when that came out, like Phil had mentioned, you know, what does this mean to what we're doing? What does this mean to how we conduct business? Because, of course, the knee-jerk reaction is block it. Well, let's just block it so kids don't have access to it. Well, under that logic, you are going to stave off potentially some issues for a short period of time. But if this is integrated into virtually everything that you're interfacing with, you know, at some point in the relatively near future, you're fighting a losing battle. Mm-hmm. Number two, this idea that we have to be resistant to change in education is just as laughable as it is anywhere else in any sector. And so when you think about mechanisms by which we can utilize this to our benefit, you're now thinking along the right lines, right? So back in the old days, I'm old enough that clearly Google wasn't around when I was a kid. And in fact, it wasn't even around until after I graduated college.
But I hear you.
The point is that there was some concern. Oh, the kid can just, and I taught science, the kid can just Google and get the answer. Mm-hmm. You know, so, oh, let's not have them have cell phones. Let's not have them use computers when they take a test. And that happened for a bit. But then also we kind of came to our senses in education and thought, well, wait a second. If anybody can get these sorts of answers in milliseconds, right, then what is the point to memory recall sorts of questions? Isn't science, for example, more about application and understanding than it is about memory and recall? And the answer to that question is absolutely. And as an individual who worked in that sector prior to getting into public education, the things that you need, you memorize, you know, because you use them on a regular basis. The things that you don't use with regular frequency, then you have to go back and find the answer. And frankly, Google is great for that. But what's the benefit of me putting that on a test? Mm. Like if I say, James, what's Avogadro's number? And you can't come up with 6.022 times 10 to the 23rd because you're not operationally using it. Mm-hmm. That's inconsequential. Mm-hmm. You can put that in Google right now and have the answer. Boom, done. With ChatGPT, there's a similar framework. However, it's a bit more comprehensive, right? And mm-hmm. us understanding and education in collaboration and working with parents, right? How we can use that to benefit ourselves and students and their learning is really what the linchpin is. And so parents that are engaged in understanding what their kids are or aren't doing is fantastic in any regard, whether it has to do with technology or whether it has to do with just being a decent human being, right? Mm-hmm. And everything under the sun. But clearly, this is not a circumstance in which it's just a parent thing or just a school thing. And what's interesting about the ChatGPT piece is you can create, like, I mean, anything. Mm-hmm. You can say, write an analysis of the five major themes in Lord of the Flies in the voice of a ninth grade student, and it will do so.
Yeah.
And then the question is, okay, how do we find out whether or not that's what a kid did? Well, there's software and tools that are being created to identify AI-generated materials. And then the other question is what does the process look like as we investigate this in the classroom? So we're not simply saying, hey, jump on ChatGPT and have it write you a neat little paper. Because frankly, that's not the point.
Yeah.
Right. The paper, the end result is really not the point. I mean, that's what you're going to get the grade on. But the stages of how you get there, the process of writing, identifying and utilizing your voice and backing conversations or information with data and sources, these pieces. So that's really the linchpin. And it's quite interesting in terms of what it means for what we're doing and how it's going to look in the next 5 to 10 years.
When I teach at Second City, this came up, and we were had a little bit of a fear in our writing classes about this. So we tried it. We threw into a ChatGPT, write me a 2-minute sketch with in a restaurant, and we got something out that a computer might laugh at, but nobody else is going to. And we tried this again and again and again, and everything that's kicking out is like that. It's not funny. It's a very like boring like scene and stuff, and we felt. Well, okay, well, we're not going to worry about this as much. But as this has evolved, and that was only 2 months ago, and then a month later, all of a sudden it's adapted and it's a little bit better. And it's still not funny, but it's adapted, it's learning and everything. And so we talk about this openly with our class. We have adults, it's not nearly the same thing as being in the high schools or grade schools or anything. And in talking about this, we have found from a lot of our students and everything that there isn't. They are not using this stuff. So it. And I look at the stats, and I do a little look into this a little bit. And it does seem to be the concern is with grade school, with middle schools, with high schools, with that. We don't really have middle schools anymore, but with high schools and that. One of the things that I lean on with this is trusting our educators. I trust our education system. I trust our educators. I feel that this works out. I feel that we find that we get around to this one. Whether it is, I'd love to talk with you more about the technology that can prevent this stuff or see this stuff, Phil. Right. I'd like to talk a little more about that. But whether it is those devices or it is just our human instinct and brain to be able to tell, well, Johnny didn't write this. There's not one thing in here that sounds like a kid from high school would write something like this. Like, if you're paying attention, I feel like you can see some differences. It's not to say it's a clear all. But I trust our educators. I don't have as much fear about this because of that. I also lean in on and trust what the job is. What the job is that I as a parent have. What the job is as you guys have as educators. And what we all signed up for. Our job is, as much as we would love to protect our children and keep them in a bubble and not let the world ever affect them, never ever have a sad day or anything like that. That is not our job. My daughter, my oldest daughter right now, is on a 30-hour train ride. Going from here to Texas. I would love anything more in the world than to be right beside her and making darn sure she is safe through that whole trip. That ain't my job as a parent. I gotta let her do that. If I'm doing my job, she can fly on her own. So as educators, as parents, it is not to shelter our children and to keep them away from things like this, but to let them know about these things and to make them aware of it. So when they are at our age and they're out in society, they're that much more prepared for this stuff. So if anything, I think we should be facing these fears, these problems and everything. It's part of our job. Do you guys agree with that? Or because that's the way I'm looking at it and the way I'm seeing it.
Yeah, I actually, we talked about, and it's a book I've heard, it's called The AI for Educators by Matt Miller. He's a educational kind of guru, and he has a little book that he wrote about this as soon as this stuff came out. And he talked about that, mm-hmm. where it's, like Craig alluded to, either mm-hmm. block, or do you... You know, let them have access to it. Teach them how to use it appropriately in the classroom. You know, what should you use it for? What shouldn't you use it for? Because ultimately, when they graduate, they're going to go out into the world, and they're going to have this stuff at their fingertips. And you have to teach the kids, kind of like how you said, fly on their own and learn how to use the AI. Because it's not going to go away, and it's only going to get better and better. And maybe eventually they'll get funny.
Yeah, but, maybe.
Not. I don't
know. You never know. Yeah.
And then how do you use it to maybe – generate ideas of how what you're going to write your paper on, or generate main topics, and then go from there. Some kids struggle with that.
I want to get into two things with you here, Phil. First, I'd like to, unless you had some, Craig, I didn't want to cut you off if you did.
No, that's great. Okay. But I think what I would quickly add is just this underlying idea. So I say this a bit tongue-in-cheek and with a heavy amount of sarcasm, but, you know, you're only hurting yourself. Right. We all remember that phrase.
True.
Right.
It's true.
And
I had my mother saying it in the back.
Absolutely.
Of my head,
yeah. And so if you're having a machine do your work for you, I think that's great if it's in the proper context. But when we're trying to assess and evaluate your relative ability to write something or maybe tell a joke or, you know, edit a video, whatever the case may be. It behooves us to ensure that the person that we're critiquing or evaluating is the human being doing it, right? And that's the piece where that support and understanding around what's the function of this. And what'll probably change over time is what our expectations are. And I say mm-hmm. over time because, of course, these things, you can't change on a dime. I mean, you remember when the VCR came out and the microwave came out, right? They weren't used like they were to the extent they were when they were in their heyday. I mean, mm-hmm. that's kind of how technology and the uptake of technology is. And so I just point that out and say, look, you know, it is a learning process on all sides, and identifying how best to integrate it while understanding we want to still see the human component and skills in order to ensure that we're imparting the correct emphasis on the skills we need to see to confer a diploma ultimately is what we're, that's the game we're in.
You have to take a test in class. Chances are you're not going to be able to pull up your phone. So you're still going to have to answer these things when it comes right down to the push of it. Two things here that I wanted to talk with you about, Phil. One, you mentioned the tools to prevent this. I think that's very interesting. What kind of tools are there to notice these things or to prevent them?
Well, the biggest one that we're using in the district is tool called No Red Ink. Mm. And then the, I can't think of the other one, Craig, off the top of my head. It's Turn It In. You basically, the students have to submit their paper into Turn It In. And actually, Turn It In, it's a site.
Yeah,
they submit their paper to it. And actually, that started out as a way to prevent plagiarism and, mm-hmm. you know, make sure that kids were studying their papers properly, and that they weren't actually just searching the internet to find a paper already done by that, and it would actually check the paper for its authenticity against, you know, other people's writings and how much phrases were the same. Well, now they built in an AI detector, like we can tell, because you mentioned earlier the voice, people have a voice, right? Yeah. And you know, if a ninth grader that's not really a good writer all of a sudden turns his writing piece, you're like, what? This does not look legitimate from this student, because I saw his writing the first day of class, because I did a baseline writing,
right?
And this is not his voice. So there is some of that, and that detectors are getting smarter and smarter too, because they're actually using AI to detect if AI wrote it,
right?
So it's pretty interesting how that's getting detected and so forth. So,
and technology has always done this. The first job I had, I was working at a video rental store, and they get these magazines that just come to the stores. And on one page was this device to help keep people from dubbing your VHS tapes. On the very next page was a device to counter that device.
Nice.
There's, you know, these things have always, it's always been this way with tech.
Yep.
And with that, and they're, with that, I think that there has always been a fear. You were touching on this before, Craig, about certain items or how to use them and how to integrate them into our society. And I'm curious about the positives of AI. All we talk about right now are the negative, 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 negative. It's here for a reason. We're using it for reasons. Are there positives that we have in the education system when it comes to artificial intelligence?
I think there are a lot of positives. I mean, one, for our teachers, it could help them generate new ideas. You know, just give them ideas, and then you build on that. You don't use those. But, you know, when I taught, I was a tech ed teacher, so figure out processes. And now I can, instead of Googling how do I fix this on this your car, then you get a bunch of websites, and you have to kind of go through it. Now you could actually just go to the AI engine, type in how do I do this, and actually it'll come back and tell you the steps, how to do it, what tools you need.
Yeah.
And you don't have to decipher 10 websites and 10 different opinions. You can kind of use that and go, okay, I've got a baseline. So I do think there are good positives for it in helping things in short term, and we'll see where it goes long term. But there's a lot of different ones. That's just one that really sticks to my head real easily. You know, generating topics for writing, you know, generating different ways to do different things.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, that alone is a good enough reason to me. I mean, and the thing with this kind of tech, and again, something you touched on earlier, Craig, when we first get the microwave, well, we know it heats up popcorn or this and that. Well, wait a minute, I can make a meal in a minute? I'm a bachelor. This sounds great. I love this. You know, these kind of things. We find other uses for this stuff. We don't even know all the uses we might have for this in the next year, 2 years, or even 10 years down the line when it comes to some of this stuff. And anything that can help our teachers sounds good to me. Like, sign me up. Like, I'm all right with that. If we got a counter, we have to do some things to adjust to, okay. But you had me at helping our teachers.
Yeah.
And it sounds like that this can be one of those things that could, because you bring up a nice point there, Phil, I think, with the ideas part. A lot of AI was originally designed to just get the ball rolling. It wasn't meant to do the work for you.
Right.
It was meant to get your brain stimulated, to get the ideas flowing and everything. A lot of creative people have issues with that. A lot of people just in general have issues with that, coming up with ideas. Ask any stand-up comedian, hey, make me laugh. Like, it happens to everybody. So it's right. a nice tool for that use. It seems like there's also a lot of use that it could give towards being like a teacher's assistant in the future too, as far as that goes. And we all know that is a spot that we could definitely use for our teachers as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I mean, just kind of wrapping up on that whole part of helping teachers. I mean, in this book that I was just mentioned, that AI for Educators, talked about the calculator, like when that came onto the scene. You know, like, oh my gosh, kids are never going to be able to do mental math anymore. It's going to be the end of math forever. Well, we obviously know that didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
And we all have, you know, the famous line was, you're not always going to have a calculator in pocket.
Yeah.
Well, almost every single one of us has one of the most powerful calculators in your pocket now as you walk around. So in we still know how to do mental math, as Craig mentioned earlier. The things you need to know because of your job, you're going to memorize those and you're going to know them.
You know, and there's a part of this too, and I don't think we're forgetting this by any means. I know you guys definitely aren't, but I think that I get a little lost with this sometimes. My kids are older and that and everything. There comes a point where we have to trust them, where we have to rely on them, to rely on their own brains, to rely on their own instincts, their own feelings. They're sitting there, they have their computer in front of them, they could use ChatGPT or they could spend the next 3 hours doing this book report. They make that decision. That's on them. They have to do that. Whether they're 16 or 25, it's on them to make that call, and us giving them the hopefully helping them find that moral compass to be able to make that decision too. That's a big part of this as well, this whole process that we're going through.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you want to see how powerful these tools are, watch what young people do with them.
Yeah.
I mean, you're probably not going to see, you know, some 60 or 70 year old human being with the next money-making venture based on this AI technology. It's probably going to be a young person, right?
Yeah.
And that, I think, is a bit by design. And the idea that that they're going to investigate and figure out ways to integrate, and ultimately, if it comes down to starting a small business or figuring out a way to make money or making your life easier or all of those things, it's probably going to come from young people, right? And I think we don't even know, as adults, teachers, whatever our sector happens to be, where it's ultimately going to end and what you can possibly do with these things. And there are, of course, we talk about all the, to me, there's more positives in the short term than there are negatives. There's no question. Right. And I'm talking about its application in education. Mm-hmm. Clearly, I think there's some things we as a society are going to have to struggle with existentially speaking when you're talking about AI and what it means for a number of things, military and applications mm-hmm. and business applications and things along those lines. And I don't mean to connotate that new technology is without any ill, you know, like it's all positive and we welcome it with open arms, because there are some, like I said, existential or philosophical questions that we have to work through as a society. But I think we're going to get there. But in terms of like classroom use, clearly we're not talking about, nuclear arms race or AI drones or something
like that. This isn't war games. This
correct.
I had to make that reference. I'm sorry. I knew you guys would get it, so I had to make it.
Before I go to the next thing, Phil, was there anything else that you think is important to the topic of AI, of technology in the schools that we could touch on? You'll be with us again, of course, but just before we wrapped up.
With the AI and as with any technology, and in my job, it's my only constant is change. And Craig, I think, mentioned that before.
Yeah.
We're always changing. We don't really know what we don't know yet because it's just such a new thing, but the AI is going to be really interesting in not only the writing side of what we're talking about, but other parts. You know, Craig's mentioned imaging and video. That's going to be the next step. And we're not even, I mean, I'm already seeing it in some images. I don't know if you've seen it at all or not, but where you can take old black and white photos from the, you know, and then it automatically puts color in it, it looks at the different things, and it really colorizes them, which is amazing to me.
Yeah. Now they've got it where they can have Johnny Cash singing a pop song that just came out. Some of this stuff and everything. It's crazy. But it's also, I feel like your instincts tell you so much in life. You know, that fight or flight thing is still an existed thing that every human being has in them. And I feel like, I'm not saying it's a one-all that can tell all the time. It's a perfect lie detector. But I feel like you know oftentimes when you're seeing something or reading something. And that right there gives me a little bit more hope, along with certainly all the positives that AI can bring.
I would agree with you, James, as long as you're a rational, pragmatic human being, because we've seen what social media can do and the absolutely outlandish, bizarre, wild, conspiracies that are out there that gain traction. And that's horrifying. So the deepfake stuff and whatnot is quite concerning. Mm. And that's what I'm alluding to in terms of these philosophical and existential sort of questions that we have to answer as a society and where this might possibly go. Because I think there's evidence that some individuals aren't intellectually prepped to do that kind of pragmatic and rational review of materials. And that is incredibly damaging.
I wanted to wrap up with wrap up with the annual Stuff the Bus supply drive that we're looking at. It's getting right towards the last days of this here. We just had Terry in the morning talking about this a little bit. Craig, are there anything in particular that needs that we know of or just encouraging people what you got? If you can donate it, please do. We appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. So as a member of the United Way board for the last 6 years, I am very appreciative and grateful for the United Way's organization to do Stuff the Bus each year. Additionally, the fact that I would highlight is that need has increased over that time. We saw the highest amount of need last year, and I would anticipate we're going to see as much, if not more, again this year. And frankly, anything that you can spare, that you can provide, will find its way into hands of kids that need it. And clearly, anything under the sun, colored pencils and crayons, all the way up to backpacks and calculators, that sort of stuff. So
blank, plain colored folders, Terry mentioned, is a big one we could really use right now. We're always looking for plain colored notebooks as well, markers, highlighters. If you can pick up a couple extra when you're getting your own kids stuff or anything and drop them off, there's not many opportunities to impact the future, and you can do that with this.
Absolutely.
We greatly appreciate everybody that's a part of this one, and you can find out more by going to uwswac.org. If people have follow-up questions for either of you gentlemen, Phil, if people want to reach out to you, find out a little bit more about some of the things we've talked about, how can they reach you?
Best is just email me, probably right off of our district website, philip.bigelow@wrps.net.
Excellent. Craig, same
similar,
question.
Right? Are my emails on the website are 715-424-6701.
And again, the website, wrps.org. Be sure to bookmark that webpage. Thank you both so much. Appreciate the great conversation, the great time. Have a good weekend.
Thank you.
Thanks.
We'll be back next week with more Midday Magazine right here on 97.5 FM, 1320 AM, WFHR, locally grown radio.
Missed your favorite show live on air? It's easy to find what you enjoy wherever you listen to podcasts, including Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. And we're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app.
WFHR Wisconsin Rapids, 1320 AM and W248DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
Keep up on the day's news, talk, and sports on Wisconsin's home for locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR, 1320 AM.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Wendy Gillette in New York. Former President Donald Trump and his aides face new charges of trying to get camera footage deleted at Mar-a-Lago in connection with the classified documents case. CBS News correspondent Natalie Brand from Washington.
The indictment also alleges a violation of the Espionage Act, accusing Trump of showing an Iran war plan to several people without security clearances at his New Jersey golf club. According to the indictment, a recording obtained by CBS News captured the 2021 conversation Trump had with two staffers, a book writer and a publisher.
Trump and all the other GOP presidential contenders will speak at the Lincoln Day dinner tonight in Iowa. Trump and Ron DeSantis are appearing at the same campaign event for the first time. The Alabama woman who confessed to creating a story about seeing a toddler on the road and then being kidnapped is facing charges. Carly Russell is charged with falsely reporting an incident. Hoover Police Chief Nick Durzis.
Judging from the amount of phone calls and emails that we've received from people all over the country, I know many are shocked and appalled that Ms. Russell is only being charged with two misdemeanors, despite all the panic and disruption her actions caused. Let me assure you,